Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company, a Chicago craft brewery that works to innovate new ways to brew and age beer. More at gooseisland.com. You don't need to be the only beer you drink. We just want to be the best beer you drink.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and Greg, we have got the mighty Melvins talking to us about their career on this episode of Sound Opinions. They defy any easy genre classification. I mean, the best way I can describe the Melvins is one of those handful of bands, every time I see them, the top of my head gets sliced off and my brains spill out all over me. That's the Melvins, coming up later in the show.
But first, the story of Skiffle. That is singer-songwriter Billy Bragg performing Rock Island Line. That song was a huge hit in 1956 for a British singer named Lonnie Donegan, and it spawned a craze across the UK for skiffle music, a raw take on American blues played by white British youth.
You know, skiffle was fairly short-lived, Greg, and it never made a big impact in America. It's largely forgotten today, even in the UK. But Billy Bragg argues that skiffle was a revolutionary moment in British pop music that put guitars in the hands of teenagers. Always a good thing. It laid the foundation, he says, for the British invasion of the 60s and even introduced the DIY sensibility of punk.
Bragg's written about the skiffle craze in a new book called Roots, Radicals, and Rockers. And he sat down recently with Sound Opinions producer Evan Chung, and he made the case for skiffle's importance, starting off by defining exactly what skiffle is.
A simple definition would be British schoolboys in the mid-1950s playing Lead Belly's repertoire. That would be the 140-character definition of skiffle.
Well, John Henry told his little woman, gonna cook my supper soon. I got 90 miles of track, I'm going to line. Gonna line them by the light of the moon. Lord, Lord, gonna line them by the light of the moon.
Lonnie Donegan, who's kind of the progenitor of the skiffle craze, he has a hit in 1956 with Lead Belly's Rock Island Line. And he goes out on tour. He does a week in Liverpool in November 1956. George Harrison goes every night. He's 13. Paul McCartney goes one night. He's 14. And he gets his dad to get rid of his trumpet and buy him a guitar as a result. Within 2 weeks of Donegan playing in Liverpool, John Lennon has formed his own skiffle band called Quarrymen with his mates at school. If you imagine that experience, obviously we know about that, that microcosm, because of what came after. But if you imagine that times a million, maybe? It's very much a kind of a craze, a playground craze. Sales of guitars in the UK after Donegan had his hit with Rock Island Line went from 5,000 a year to 250,000 a year in 1957. It's a bit like the Cabbage Patch Dolls, you know. Every kid had to have a guitar, every boy anyway, because it's very much a boy thing. So the real effect is it kind of invigorates a group of people who you could really sort of call the first British teenagers.
Got a 38 pistol as long as my arm. Kill anybody that done me harm. I'm gonna ride Railroad Bill. I'm gonna ride Railroad Bill.
If you want to understand what came later, if you want to understand the Beatles or Astral Weeks or Led Zepp 3 or Motley Hoople's All the Young Dudes, if you want to really find out where that impulse originally came from, then you can't get to the roots of British pop and rock and folk and R&B without that significant moment.
Well, let's back up a bit and let's try to trace the history of skiffle for a moment. So it starts in this maybe even more surprising genre, which is the trad jazz scene in the UK. So what was trad jazz?
Trad jazz was an attempt by fans of jazz to get back to an authentic sense of what jazz was, as was played, they believed, as was played in New Orleans, probably from sort of like 1895, at its very earliest iteration, to about 1915. It was kind of very difficult for the trad musicians in the UK to do anything other than get inspiration from the records. And on the records were predominantly recorded in the 1920s. They're very early recordings. And because of the primitive equipment they recorded on, the musicians had to blow very hard to be heard. You know, they just put a mic up in the middle of the room and you just went for it. So the trad guys in the UK, they just blew, like Billy-O, they blew as hard as they could, like these records. And as a result, after about 30 minutes, their lips were so numb, they didn't have much technique, they couldn't play. So in order not to lose their audiences, what they did was they put down their brass instruments, they picked up acoustic guitars and washboards for rhythm and a double bass, and they played what would broadly be Lead Belly's repertoire.
Yonder come a Miss Rosie, how in the world do you know? I can tell her by apron and the dress she wore, umbrella on her shoulder, piece of paper in her hand. She's going to ask the governor, turn her loose, my man, let the midnight special.
They called these sessions breakdown sessions. They became very popular, sometimes more popular than the actual trad jazz they were playing.
And it's out of these breakdown sessions that the music that we call skiffle emerges from. So where does that term skiffle, where does that get introduced?
Interestingly, skiffle as a word originates in Chicago. On the south side of Chicago in the 20s and 30s, African Americans would have rent parties, both a cultural event and a way to raise some money, where they would cook up some down-home food, brew up some hooch, and they'd get some guy to come along and play barrel house piano. It was a pretty raucous event. But this event was called a skiffle. Mm-hmm. But when the trad jazz guys in England, particularly a guy named Ken Collier, he did a session for the BBC. But when they decided to do some of these breakdown songs, the producer very observantly said, well, what band is this? This isn't the Ken Collier jazz band. What are you playing? And the band's manager, he said, oh, this is our skiffle band. This is the Ken Collier skiffle band. But in that moment, he changed the meaning of the word from a rent party on the south side of Chicago to a subgenre of American roots music that was indigenous to the British Isles.
Down by the riverside, gonna lay my burden down. Ain't gonna study war no more.
Skiffle's kind of the rare genre where there's one song that you can point to as kind of the definitive moment.
Yep.
And that's Lonnie Donegan's recording of Rock Island Line. Where did that song come from?
Well, the song originally came from, in its absolute essence, it came from the Rock Island Line engineering yards in Little Rock, Arkansas. But it's first recorded by the Library of Congress in 1934 at Cummings State Prison Farm, where John Lomax, assisted by Lead Belly, is recording prison work songs. And an octet of inmates led by a guy named Kelly Pace, they come and sing it as a call and response song.
I said the Rock Island Line is a mighty good road. If you want to ride, you got to ride it like you're fine. Buy your ticket at the station on the Rock Island Line.
Lead Belly had to hear a song twice, and he got it. So he took it away, and he turned it into the version that we're more familiar with, where he added the story about the train at the start of it and brought the verses in from the blues and from nursery rhymes.
For the Rock Island Line, it's a mighty good road. For the Rock Island Line, it's a road to ride. For the Rock Island Line, it's a mighty good road. If you want to ride, you got to ride it like you're fine to get your ticket and station on the Rock Island Line.
And it's this version that Lonnie Donegan bases his version on. In July 1954, Donegan records Rock Island Line as part of a New Orleans jazz album that they don't have enough material to make. So they stick a couple of these skiffle songs on just to pad out the record, really, you know. Lonnie Donegan records Rock Island Line with acoustic guitar, washboard and bass, no drums. He just goes hell for leather at Rock Island Line, and it's unlike anything kids in the UK have ever heard. It gets into the charts in the first charts of 1956 and just takes off like a rocket.
Down the Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. The Rock Island Line is a road to ride. The Rock Island Line is a mighty good road. And if you want to ride, you got to ride it like you're fine to get your ticket at the station on the Rock Island Line. Hallelujah, I'm safe from sin. The good Lord's coming for to see me again. Down the Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road.
In my country, that is really revolutionary. Donegan is the first British artist to get in the charts playing a guitar.
What was the appeal of Lonnie Donegan to the audience in the UK?
I'm not sure it was so much Donegan as what he was doing. If I could just sort of set the scene a little bit for you, for those kids who were buying his records. Rationing in my country ended a month before Lonnie Donegan recorded Rock Iron Line. So it lasted from 1940 until 1954. So a kid like, let's say John Lennon, born in 1940, it's not until he's 14 years old he can go in a sweet shop and buy what he wants. So if you can imagine all that pent-up sort of urge to be able to have what you want, being told all the time you can't have this, you have to have a bit of paper to get, when you buy something, you have to have a ration book. And because what happens is Donegan's record gets in the charts about 3 or 4 months after Rock Around the Clock gets into the charts.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock.
But what happened with Rock Around the Clock? Although it got to number one in the charts, the BBC barely played it. The BBC was the mediator of all British culture at the time. Radio was king. And my sense is these kids thought, you're going to ration rock and roll? You're going to ration rock and roll now? It's finally coming, you're going to ration it. I'll tell you what, mate, I'm going to buy a guitar and I'm going to play this music whether you like it or not.
Dig those crazy sailors.
And I think that was the impulse that led Van Morrison, who's 12 years old, to go out and start playing Lead Belly songs.
Did the teenagers listening to skiffle and to rock and roll, did they see them as related movements at the time?
I feel they must have done, really, because the mainstream culture was so bland. You know, the British singers were crooners.
Someone broke into my heart and stole a beat or two. The finger of suspicion points at you.
And here's Donegan, he's not even got a tie on, he's not even got a jacket. He's just shaking it out, and you can hear it on the record, you know, he's kind of... And then the other thing that they really surprised everybody was that it turned out he wasn't an American. Because when they initially heard it, everyone assumed he was an American, he was playing a guitar. British people didn't play guitars, British artists. And he was just thrashing these three chords. It was so basic, anyone could do it. And when word spread that he was born in Glasgow and he's lived most of his life in London, well... This was probably the most incendiary message ever imparted to British youth. One, you don't have to be a trained musician to play music. And two, you don't have to be an American to sing American songs. This is why skiffle represents why it's so important. It's such a paradigm shift in our culture. It's the moment when British pop music moves from being a kind of jazz-based confection for grown-ups to becoming a guitar-led music for teenagers that will eventually conquer the world.
And teenagers, you've alluded to this a bit before, but I think an important part of the context, this is really the first moment in history where teenagers, as we know it, exist.
Certainly in Britain. What happens after the war is that working-class youth leave school at 15 and they can quite easily get work. There's a lot of work about. So they've got money and now they want something to spend it on. These kids leaving school, particularly the young women, are instantly visible because sales of cosmetics, of clothing, of records, rockets.
80% of the disc output is bought by the youngsters. That's 50 million records a year in Britain alone. All industry knows that to please the teenagers is the golden way to big dividends.
And this is when Donegan comes along. And the guitar represented a future. It's a paradox that they go back to Lead Belly in order to make the future happen. But it was a way of, you know, by picking up the guitar, they were saying to their parents, your culture is dead. We have our own culture. This is a new thing.
This is us, see? We're today. If you don't dig us, shoot away some square joint to the rest of the creeps. Well, why not stick around and get with it?
We're going to make the future happen. They built a bridge to the future that was so powerful that it crossed the Atlantic and it took them to the top of the United States charts.
Right. Lonnie Donegan's Rock Island Line comes over and becomes a hit in the U.S. It reaches number 8. And it seems to have, at least for a moment, a big impact on American music.
It becomes the first song that Phil Spector can play on guitar. Art Garfunkel buys it. It really actually strikes a chord with people. Donegan goes on the Ed Sullivan Show and the other guest that night is Ronald Reagan. He does a few sketches with Ronald Reagan. And interestingly, Johnny Cash's first album for Sun Records opens with Rock Island Line.
Well, Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. Rock Island Line, it's a road to ride. Rock Island Line, it's just a mighty good road. Well, if you ride, you got to ride it like you find it. Get your ticket, that's a station for Rock Island Line.
Lonnie Donegan was influencing Johnny Cash. That's a real kind of head spinner, isn't
great.
It?
Great. So for Skiffle to be a craze, there must be more artists than just Lonnie Donegan.
There is, yeah, there are. There are more artists than Lonnie Donegan. There's Chas McDavitt and Nancy Whiskey, who had a hit with Freight Train, which I think was a hit here in America as well.
Freight Train, going so fast. Freight Train, going so fast. I don't know what train he's on. Won't you tell me where he's gone?
There's Johnny Duncan, who was an American airman who came to England and had a hit with a song called Last Train to San Fernando, which was actually originally a Calypso song.
Last train to San Fernando. Last train to San Fernando. If you miss this one, you'll never get another one. Be-de-de-de-bum-bum to San Fernando.
There were the Vipers, who were never a jazz band. They were just skifflers. They kind of like the Skiffle Clash. They're kind of rough and ready. And they stayed rough and ready throughout their career.
Now me and my wife went to town.
Silly lady, silly.
Well, we went to buy a $10 gown.
Silly lady, silly.
Oh, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Oh, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Well, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
And then there's loads of little bands, but none of them ever got to the stage, apart from Donegan, really to the stage where they had a long-term career. They kind of came and went. Peak Skiffle happens in July 1957 when John Lennon's Skiffle band are playing a church fete in Liverpool, and Paul McCartney comes along and Lennon and McCartney meet for the first time. Then eventually Paul brings his mate George Harrison along. They become the Quarrymen.
Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yeah, that'll be the day when you make me cry.
And this is the significant thing about Skiffle. It's not what Donegan and Chas McDavitt and those guys did. It's what their fans did. It's what the 12 and 13 and 14-year-olds did. They estimate there were between 30 and 50,000 Skiffle groups playing at peak Skiffle. But they were playing in scout huts and church halls and school gyms. They never recorded anything. Every sentient schoolboy in the UK learns three chords on a guitar.
Streamline, stream, fastest train around.
So what that means is that when the Beatles do break in the United States of America in January 1964, there is a whole cohort of road-hardened bands ready to follow them. And in the 2 years between the Beatles' first hit and the end of 1965, there's a British artist at the top of the charts in the US for 52 weeks out of 104, and every single one of them, apart from Petula Clark, originated in a skiffle band.
Right, and you have this whole chapter at the end of your book where you list all the artists that were influenced by skiffle or started in skiffle, and it's virtually every British invasion band you can think of, the Beatles, the Stones, the Who, the Kinks, the Hollies, the Animals, the Zombies.
When it carries on into the 70s, I mean, you know, there's a lovely clip on YouTube of a 14-year-old Jimmy Page from a BBC Kids programme singing a song called Mama Don't Allow No Skiffle Playing Around Here.
Well, we don't care what Mama don't allow, gotta play that skiffle anyhow. Mama don't allow no skiffle around here.
Now then, you're called what?
JG Skiffle Group.
And you come from?
Epsom.
What are your two names? Yours is?
James Page and
David Housman. Both from Epsom.
Yeah.
Well, what are you going to do when you leave school? Take up skiffle?
No, I want to do biological research.
David Bowie's first gig was singing Lonnie Donegan songs at scout camp. Elton John, Rod Stewart, all those guys. Ian Hunter from Motley Hoople. Bjorn from ABBA, his first band was a skiffle band. So it's the influence that skiffle had at a very early age on these kids, and they were kids, that goes on to, although they don't themselves play skiffle, it goes on to, as I claim in the title of my book, change the world.
So there's 50,000 potential DIY skiffle bands. Among those are the people who create the template for rock music on both sides of the Atlantic for the next 20, 30 years. What is the reputation of skiffle in the UK today?
It doesn't really have much of a reputation, unfortunately, because what happens is that in 1967, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band comes out and Rolling Stone is produced, published for the first time. What happens is beards are grown, they're stroked, concepts come into music making, and pop, good old fun pop, becomes rock. And so in that atmosphere, if you're a British rock star and Rolling Stone says to you, who inspired you to pick up the guitar? You're going to say Chuck Berry, aren't you? You're going to say Buddy Holly. You're not going to say Chas McDavid and Nancy Whiskey. So skiffle becomes like that really embarrassing photo from the school yearbook. You don't want no one to say, and it gets put in the attic.
But I guess maybe the overarching question some might have is the music itself worth listening to? Or put another way, why today should I listen to a Lonnie Donegan record when I have access to the original Lead Belly or the original Big Bill Brunsey records?
Well, that was a good question at the time. And in comparison, I don't even think Donegan would say that his records were better than Lead Belly's versions of the song. It does sound pretty ropey if you just listen to the music. It does sound a bit quirky. And I mean, the fact is, none of us will really ever be able to be in that position of a 15-year-old who's grown up in a war and rationing, listening to, you know, white bread English jazz-based pop, to suddenly hear Donegan come out the radio growling, singing Rock Iron Line. But something happened to those guys. Something very similar to what happened with me when I first saw The Clash. That's partly what drew me to this. I think there's a lot of similarities between skiffle and punk. Here's three chords in our former group, DIY music. But more importantly than that, the way the Clash empowered me, because they were like me. And I think that's what happens with Donegan. Donegan breaks the fourth wall of British pop. And he doesn't only talk to kids, but he actually hands them the means by which to escape from the past, which is the acoustic guitar. He says, come on, you can do this. And they pick it up, and we're still living with the world they created.
That is singer-songwriter Billy Bragg talking with Sound Opinions producer Evan Chung about his new book on the 1950s skiffle phenomenon, Roots, Radicals, and Rockers. Do you have any thoughts about skiffle and its place in music history? Call and leave us a message on our hotline, 888-859-1800. After a short break, we'll talk with the Melvins about their phenomenal 34-year career. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.